After dinner, they retired to the living room and returned the uprooted pieces of furniture and decor to their proper positions, while Thomas poured everyone a glass of 40-year-old port. Pitt looked at Kelly. "You told Kanai that your father's formula was hidden in the laboratory." She glanced at Thomas as if seeking permission. He smiled slightly and nodded his approval. "Dad's formula is in a file folder that fits in a hidden panel in back of the door."
"Josh is a brave man," Giordino said respectfully. "Despite a nasty beating, he told Kanai nothing."
Thomas shook his head.
"Believe me, if Dirk had not walked into the room when he did, I would have spilled the secret to save Kelly further torture."
"They could come back, perhaps even tonight," said Kelly uneasily.
"No," Pitt assured her. "Kanai would need time to put another team together. He won't try again soon."
"Kelly must leave the house and go into hiding," said Thomas seriously.
"I could go to Washington with you and Al," said Kelly, with a mischievous gleam in her eye. "I'd be safe under your care."
"I'm not sure yet whether we're going back to Washington." Pitt set down his empty glass. "Could you please show us Dr. Egan's laboratory?"
"There's not much to see," said Thomas.
He led them from the house to the barn. Inside were three counters, upon which sat the apparatus seen in most chemistry laboratories. Pitt walked around the room. "This can't be where Dr. Egan conceived and designed his magneto-hydrodynamic engines."
"Why do you say that?" asked Thomas cautiously.
"This room is a chemistry lab, no more. Dr. Egan was a brilliant engineer. I see no drafting tables, no computers programmed for displaying three-dimensional components, no facilities or machinery to construct working models. I'm sorry, but this is not where an inventive mind would create a great advance in propulsion technology."
He stared at Kelly and Thomas.
"What I can't figure out is why you're both stroking me."
"Kelly and I are hiding nothing from you, Mr. Pitt," said Thomas. "The truth is, we do not know where Elmore conducted his research. He was a fine man and a good friend, but he had a secretive streak that was nothing short of fanatical. Elmore would disappear for days, sometimes weeks, in a secret research laboratory whose location was known only to him. Kelly and I tried to follow him on different occasions, but he always eluded us."
"Did he ever take time for pleasure?" inquired Pitt.
Josh and Kelly looked at each other.
"He was incredibly passionate about researching the Vikings," said Thomas.
"He was also a dedicated fan of Jules Verne," added Kelly. "He read his works over and over."
Pitt motioned around the laboratory.
"I see no indication of any such passions."
Kelly laughed. "We haven't showed you his library."
The building that housed Egan's study was made of stone and appeared to be designed after an 18th-century grain mill. Slate covered the roof, and ivy rose on the rock walls. The only admission to modern convenience was the skylights in the roof. Thomas used a large, old-fashioned key to unlock the thick oak door. The rows of mahogany bookshelves and the paneled walls oozed finesse and refinement. The big, overstuffed chairs and couch were leather, and the desk, still littered with research papers, was a huge rosewood roll-top. Paintings of Viking ships hung on the only open wall. On a table below the paintings sat a model of a submarine nearly 4 feet in length. As a marine engineer himself, Pitt studied the model closely, noting the exacting craftsmanship. The boat was rounded on the ends with portholes along the sides and a small tower that sat toward the bow. The propeller's blades were shaped more like paddles than the curved tips of modern designs. Pitt had never seen a craft like it. The only comparison he could think of was a diagram of a submarine he'd studied once that had been built by the Confederates during the Civil War. The brass plaque on the base beneath the model read, "Nautilus, 70 meters in length with an 8-meter beam. Launched 1863. "A beautiful model," said Pitt. "Captain Nemo's submarine from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?"
"Dad designed it from an etching in the original book and found a master model builder to construct it."
"Classic work,"
said Giordino, admiringly. Pitt continued his tour, examining the titles of the books on the shelves. They all covered the Viking era from 793 to 1450 A.D. One entire section was devoted to the runic alphabets used by the Germanic and Norse people from the 3rd to the 13th centuries. Kelly watched Pitt's interest in the books and came up, holding his arm. Dad became an expert at translating the characters found on runestones throughout the country. He believed the Vikings came this far south? She nodded. He was convinced. When I was little, he dragged Mother and I around half the Midwest states in an old camper while he copied and studied every runestone he could find. He found and recorded over 35 stones with ancient runic alphabets. She paused and pointed to one entire shelf of binders and notebooks. It's all right there.
Did he ever intend to publish his findings? Asked Giordino.
Not as far as I knew. Almost 10 years ago, it was as if a light switch was turned off. He suddenly lost all interest in his Viking research.
From one fixation to another, said Thomas. After the Vikings, Elmore immersed himself in Jules Verne.
He swept a hand across one bookcase.
He collected every book, every story Verne ever wrote.